Hello, everybody. This is Terrence Hopkins, better known as T-Hop the Super Cop, host of Police Talk 101, and the president of the Black Police Association of Greater Dallas. You are listening to the greatest show on the earth, led by the great surgeon, Dr. Williams, Race, Violence, Medicine. How about it?
I love it. I had to hold myself from chuckling. I didn't want to laugh on that awesome intro. That's going to go into the archives. Welcome to Race, Violence, and Medicine. This is the show where we have constructive dialogue about challenging topics with the intent of inspiring you to action. I'm your host, Dr. Brian Williams. I'm a trauma surgeon working on Chicago's South Side. I am a speaker and also a writer, and I'm excited about the series of shows we're about to kick off on race, violence, and medicine. So we have several law enforcement officers lined up to talk to us about their lives. And specifically, we have African-American police officers who will share with us the additional professional and social challenges that come with doing this very important and challenging job. And our first guest to kick off the series, you guys are going to love this one. We have Senior Corporal Terrence Hopkins from the Dallas Police Department. Is it 29 years, T-Hop?
29 years, going on 30 this 29. Year.
Going on 30 years. Terrence Hopkins, also known as T-Hop the Super Cop. 29-year veteran of Dallas Police Department. He is also president of the Black Police Association of Dallas and host of the radio show Police Talk 101. And we're going to get into all of that for the show. T-Hop, thank you for joining us on Race, Violence, and Medicine.
Well, it's an honor, sir, to be on your maiden voyage show. And I hope that your listeners, whoever's going to hear this podcast, really get something from it from probably a different perspective than we normally hear that come from law enforcement. And, of course, your side on the medical side. So I hope some folks are really able to learn something from this.
And if they don't, I tell you what, T-Hop, I always have at least one listener, and that's my mother. So I know she's going to enjoy this show. Even if they don't, she will.
I got the kind of the same on my show, so you better believe it, brother. It's all good.
All right, well, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. I kind of gave the executive summary of all your fancy titles, but what can we not find on a Google search?
All right. So my name is Terrence Hopkins. I was born and raised in Tulsa, Oklahoma, land of the Black Wall Street. A very humble upbringing. Dad left at an early age, remarried, single mom of four kids, actually part of the welfare program. I have no problem mentioning that as a single mom raising four kids. But the good thing about that is all four kids went to college. And of course, everybody became professionals. I myself, I know time is short, went to Oklahoma State University, graduated, moved to Dallas, Texas. First job was a security guard. Then I worked for Baylor, construction company under my major, which was in electrical engineering, was what I was going to be. And then I joined the police department 29 years ago, and I've been patrol, I've been on a narcotics task force, a prostitution task force. I trained rookies for 10 years straight, and I have the great honor of a lot of people consider me one of the best field training officers in Dallas. I have a record number of arrests on my belt, all legitimate, I've worked some small stint at the Dallas Police Academy as well. And then I transferred into my current job, which I'm a tactical planner, special event planner, which if there's any large event comes to Dallas, I pretty much plan the security package for it. And that's anywhere from races to the marathon to the State Fair of Texas, which is one of the largest in the country, big conventions, also dignitary protection. So if the president comes to town, I plan that security package along with all of the protests and First Amendment things that we have in Dallas.
That is
and
a
then
lot.
Besides, and then besides being the president of the Black Police Association and all that brings, right?
Right, right. And I want to talk about all that, but I first want to go back to your single mother with four kids. Or where do you fall in line with the four kids? And then talk about that upbringing, because I'm guessing people have their own biases when they hear about welfare and single mothers and,
right.
and African-Americans. That touches a lot of hot buttons here, and you are an example of how that is not a barrier to success.
Right. So I am number three, third youngest. So I have an older sister, older brother. Then comes me, then my little sister, which we lost to cancer. So, you know, here's a mother raising four kids, you know, 50 years ago. And of course her income level, was not great, being a high school educated mother and having to get back into the workforce after our father left. So she qualified for assistance. So, you know, we called it welfare, food stamps and all that, but it's government assistance. And rightfully so. It wasn't that my mom was lazy or anything like that. It's just that she didn't produce enough income and that aid was there. And, you know, I can say I'm a positive product of that assistance as well. So it's not always going to folks that are just trying to abuse the system or something like that. There are legitimate folks out there who just need a leg up. And, of course, we all know that just not only Black folks.
That's an important point. There are more white people on government assistance than there are Black people in this country. And
right.
The narrative
some
is that,
never
that
meets.
That's reversed.
Yeah, for some reason that never hits the major airwaves, does it?
Right, exactly. And also the fact that you in some ways have to excuse or justify why that was necessary, right? We shouldn't have to do that.
We really shouldn't.
If you're exactly. So we need to actually flip that narrative about a society as rich as this, providing assistance so that everyone can have their basic needs met. So four kids, youngest sister died of cancer. You went to Oklahoma State, and you were a double E major there for a while?
For a while, that was the game plan until I left, and one of my buddies said, man, they got a lot of jobs in Dallas, Texas. So picked up shop, came to Dallas, Texas, where all the work was, you know, not to be too far away from Oklahoma. So it was just a four-hour drive down the road and start finding work, because work was actually difficult in Oklahoma. Wasn't growing as fast as Dallas, of course.
So then how did you get into the police department? Tell us about that transition.
So actually, I saw a guy was working security, like I said, at an apartment complex one day. Saw a guy that was in a car, got a suspicious call on him. So I guess some of the residents wanted him checked out. And it was a Black male sitting in a car. So, and it was a nice, T-topped out, I think Trans Am or something like that. So I approached the guy, talked to him, and he showed me his badge. I'm like, oh, you're an officer. So ended up talking to the guy for a while, and we kind of swapped stories, and I told him mine. He's like, man, you got college. You need to join Dallas Police Department. And at that time, he needed a degree or 90 hours or something to join it. And I said, okay. So I started checking in, and of course, eventually end up getting the job. Actually, I went through the process twice. I actually failed out on the polygraph early on. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, I heard that was a way that they actually got rid of a lot of African-American candidates then, and that's just being truthful about it.
All right, that's interesting. So over 30 years, you've moved up the ranks. I'm sure you've seen a lot during that time. I'm interested to hear what your experience is like being an African American police officer. I have my own thoughts about what sort of challenges you may face based on my experience as a black doctor. I think any black professional can have. I think there's universal issues that we as black professionals face irrespective of our professions. But with police, I think you're in a different strata, which may make things a little bit more complicated. That's my assumption, but I want to hear what your perspective is on that.
So being a black man in law enforcement, man, there's a lot to it. Of course, there's the usual that as a black male, you may not really qualify, but you were given the job for various reasons. That was a component early on. You could tell a lot of times you were sitting in a car with somebody that may not necessarily be good with African Americans being in a car and having that job and or the authority to arrest people and people other than yourselves. That was a component as well. Black men arresting white men. And of course, there was a time in Dallas where a black couldn't arrest a white and black had to work on the black side of town. So, I mean, this is all historical stuff that we have to talk about sometimes. Another thing is, a lot of times, so you got it from the side, the officers. So you got it from officers who weren't really keen on the addition of blacks being accepted to law enforcement. And then you had the other side where when you dealt with a lot of African Americans in the street, you were the sellout. And, so you caught it from that end too. Oh, you just a sellout doing a white man's work and things like that. So it's a double-edged sword, working in this profession. And of course, I think like you and a lot of what African-Americans go through, oftentimes we make the statement that we have to do it twice as good because we know there are people looking to get us out because they don't think we belong in the position. So I've always made sure I've done my job well enough, actually better than well enough, that those things don't happen to me.
Right. So you're always working twice as good to get half the recognition, running twice as fast to get half as far.
Right.
And you mentioned that it's a double-edged sword. I think it sounds like you mentioned three or four edges because you have your interactions with white civilians, your interactions with black civilians, and your interactions with other law enforcement officers that are you find challenging with what you do.
Right. And I'll tell you this one story related to that. So as a rookie, almost 30 years ago, I went to a call, and so I had a white trainer at the time. And as I was talking, and the when you're on training, the trainer's job is to get you acclimated to talking to people, getting all the information you needed, getting the facts to the story, figuring out what offense or what crime it was and things like that. So as we go to this house and we're listening to this guy's story, well, of course, I noticed that the guy would not talk to me. Now, I'm asking him a series of questions. Now, this is simply a complainant. Somebody has called the police complaining on a crime or something happening. So as I'm talking to the complainant, he continually turned to talk to my white trainer. And he continued this for quite a while, and then my white trainer finally said, you need to talk to him. And even after then, the guy continued to talk to him. At one point in time, made the statement that, hey, you need to talk to this officer right here. He's the one doing the report, and if you don't want to talk to him, you won't be getting a report. I mean, it had to go to that level for this guy to actually face me and actually start talking to me, respecting me as a black law enforcement officer.
And I think it's great that you actually had the officer actually say something to correct the situation, because I mean, I've been in situations similar to that where a patient is not responding to me and then nobody says anything, right? So you have no backup, but he corrected that situation right then and there, which is what's required to have champions like that, to have the courage to,
right,
to right the wrong right then and there.
Yeah, and I will go on the record to say, you know, as challenging as it was for a black man entering into this profession and the things you had to deal with racially, I did meet, and there were several good white officers that didn't play that game and stood for righteousness. You know, it's just sad that we have that other side where we do have to deal with those issues.
Right. So that's 30 years ago. So that's putting us in the 90s?
Correct. 90s? I got hired on in 1990. That's correct.
All right. So there's a different time period. That is, I guess that's kind of the tail end of all the violence that came out of the crack epidemic. We're kind of moving into the opioid epidemic of the 2000s, which is where we are now. What else changed during that time? We start getting all the videos of
black men there.
So that was a huge difference between when you started until now. So how did your day-to-day shift when these videos started to become more and more prevalent and public, your interactions with your colleagues and how it changed you, your what you did out on the job? I'm going to say
right.
In the streets. That may not be the proper term, but I think you know what I'm trying to talk about.
Yeah, I do, and that's a good question. So the videos definitely changed the game. So videos brought a lot of things to light. So now no longer were the things that black men were complaining about just, oh, you're just talking, you're just saying it. It was caught on tape. So, and again, I will preface this by not all white officers were behaving in this manner, but it definitely showed the ones that were and still does. So the videos changed the game. A lot of stuff, you know, now was substantiated factually. So, you know, and a lot of officers start paying a price. So whether that was anything from written reprimands going into their file to days off up into terminations and then prosecutions. So that changed the game entirely. Videos, now body cams that came on officers, that were put on the officers' uniforms, at first was a big, huge in our industry. Oh no, this is going to be the worst thing ever. Because the one thing officers do worry about is we do have to use force sometimes. And the thing about force is never pretty, all right? Especially from a law enforcement officer's hand. So we know force is never, it never looks good. There's no way to pretty force up. And then when you tie white law enforcement officers to black civilian, it just doesn't look good because of the controversies there. But what I will say, though, is that since officers, the assumption was we were going to get in trouble because people didn't understand the dynamic of using force with citizens, and it never looks good on camera. We thought the world was coming to an end in the way of, well, people are not going to understand why I laid hands on this guy. And I'm not just talking about white guys now, even black officers, that it's just not going to look good on TV or video. So that actually switched from we don't want anything to do with these cameras, they're going to just get us for anything we say, do, whatever, to actually appreciating the camera and wanting a camera and thanking God for a camera, because a lot of times what we saw with the camera is that the officer was actually justified in using the force or doing what he was doing. So a lot of the body cam videos now have actually gotten officers off the hook after the person's complained, because the person complains just because you're upset because of the action the officer took, but that doesn't mean that the action was wrong. You follow me?
Right. So tell me, this is a scenario we see frequently, right? I should say frequently. When the scenario comes out, there is some body cam video that comes out, or there is a cell phone video, and we just get a clip of it. You know, it's edited down to whatever, 30 seconds. And then that goes viral. And then the story takes hold. And I've seen some of these myself, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that no matter what happened before, that was not justified.
Mm-hmm.
What do you tell someone like me that would turn to you and say, hey, I don't care what the guy did beforehand. What I saw in that 30-second video, that was beyond. And I'm talking about someone that, if they're shot and killed, they're shot, or they're restrained with what seems to be excessive force. Now, how do you explain it to a lay person, a non-LEO?
So, you know, there's always more to the story, and you're right. When you get the news clip, you get the 5-second clip. That's just it. It's a 5-10-second clip. Now, I'm not saying that's wrong by any standard, because sometimes in 5 seconds, 10 seconds, you could see what it just was, and sometimes there's nothing else to add to it. But many times there's plenty to add to it. So I often describe a particular situation to people, real situation. So you come around a corner and you see two officers pummeling a guy, right? That's all you know. I just see two officers pummeling a guy. You know, what are y'all doing? Get off him. I'm a videotaker, whatever that is. But what you didn't know is that during a foot patrol, these officers heard screams or got alerted to screams coming from the laundromat. And as they rounded the corner, this particular guy was raping a 13-year-old girl. He broke free, took off, they caught him, and of course he's resisting. So when someone resists, an officer is allowed to use the force necessary to get them under control, get them under arrest. So you didn't know that story. But all you got is that 5-second blip at the end. So now when people know that full story, and that this guy may have possibly had a weapon on him, but was definitely fighting because he knew he was going to jail because he just raped somebody and they saw it. So now does that change the story a little bit?
Right. And is that a hypothetical or is that an actual situation?
It's an actual situation. So it's an actual situation. So a lot of times it's like that. There are a lot of things leading up to that end result. There is a case where, you know, officers have dealt with somebody who kept making notice that, or making it known that he had a weapon, kept a depending like he's going to raise the weapon toward the officers or whatever like that. And they've given this guy chance after chance after chance. And finally, he makes the move that causes the officers to go ahead and use deadly force. But you may not have seen all of that video, but a lot of these situations just have a lot of story leading up to them. But, you know, nobody's going to show you. News is not going to show you an hour-long video, a 30-minute video, a 20-minute video. The news is going to show you a 5 to 10 second blurb. That's it. So you won't know much of the backstory. Again, that's not excusing all actions by police officers. It's just that a lot of time people just don't know the entire story or seeing what put the officers at such a level of alert to where they've got guns drawn and things like that.
And I'll say that there are several videos out there that seem clear cut to me that the force was excessive or unnecessary. But, you know, we can debate all those different videos. I'm interested in hear what is the discussion amongst you and your colleagues when things like this happen. Is it strictly about procedures, or does it break down along racial discussions, racial lines? Because you have a perspective that your majority colleagues do not, but you're still on the same team working together towards a common goal. So when these things happen and there's a fever pitch discussion happening in the public, what are you all talking about behind closed doors?
Right. So, and I'll go back to say, you're right. There are a lot of videos out there that are what they are. An officer used improper force. So don't get me wrong. I'm not at all making an excuse for all the videos. You know, I'm just speaking on the other side of it. So when these things happen, nowadays, we have to look at it. You know, it's just like you being a doctor. I'm sure because people experience certain things, you have to go back and look at it and use it for training, right? You have to educate yourself to know how to do it better, all right? So what happens in these deals, we will kind of Monday morning quarterback it. You know, we'll get what facts we do know. All right, officers did this, they encountered this, and they reacted this way. So we will take that information in, and we're hard on ourselves sometimes. So we'll take the information, and our discussion is, okay, in this officer's situation, because we could all possibly be in that situation. So we'll look at the situation, what facts we have, and we'll say ourselves, hey, that was justified, or hey, that was illegal, he screwed up, and it's going to cost him. So we have those discussions back and forth. Now, as you mentioned, a lot of it does go along racial lines sometimes. We are in a profession that sometimes it's kind of us against the world. Now, that's not being facetious in any type of way, but doing this job, which is extremely unique, being charged with upholding the law and bringing people to justice, and sometimes there's a lot of physical component to that, and then up until deadly force. So it's tough sometimes. So when we look at these situations and something like this happens, what officers have to be is honest with themselves. We can always, because we're the good guy, think things have to go our way or that we can do no wrong. And a lot of times, as it relates to race, a lot of the black guys, I know, black officers, can see more of the black and white to it. I notice a lot of the white officers wanting to justify more of it. Oh, well, he shouldn't have did this. Oh, he made a wrong move doing that. We can watch the same video, look at the same set of facts, and reach a different conclusion. Well, we think he jumped too early. We think the officer, you know, pulled the trigger too early. We think the officer's force wasn't justified. So sometimes we have a lot of difference in that. Now, the majority of the time, I think we're spot on, but there's a lot of times when that difference comes in and we say, nah, I don't think he should have went to deadly force at that point in time. It was not justified. So we do have those discussions.
And how does that impact your working relationship, your trust with your colleagues? Does it impact your socializing outside of the job?
Well, you know, I mean, again, you have the discussion, and the discussion should be a professional discussion. Now, you know, let's just take it with what I do. Being the president of the Black Police Association, I have to call out some injustices, right?
Right.
You know there's going to be a component of white males who are not down with that. Let's just be honest, you know. So when I see it and I got to call it the way it is, I'm going to call it the way it is. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. So, yeah, I know of some guys who don't necessarily like me explaining that the way I explain it sometimes. But, dude, I have – first of all, I got to be true to God, first of all. Then I'm going to be true to this profession. I have a higher calling. I'm going to call it what it is. I'm not going to protect it just because it's under the color of blue. If blue does right. wrong, blue needs to be held accountable and responsible for it. That's just the way it should be. So we've got to get out of this mode of anything we do is right. There are a lot of things we do that are wrong, and we have to call them out. We cannot call ourselves law enforcement officers and the ones that are supposed to stand up for right when we are doing wrong. We can't do that. So, that's going to cause some discord with some folks. Again, a lot of folks are good with it. Nope. I've had white officers say, no, Hop, he messed up. He did the wrong thing. But I've also had the guys that stand on that side of, well, no, that guy shouldn't have did this, and that officer was justified in doing it. So sometimes that hurts relationships. Sometimes people talk about you, say, oh, man, well, Hopkins is just, he's just doing this. So, yeah, that happens. but I'm grown enough, I'm mature enough in my profession and my life and my walk to call it out.
Yeah, and I see some similarities in some of the challenges you and I may have in our different professions, because as someone who cares for a lot of impoverished patients, you would hear the comments about how their poor health and poor health outcomes are somehow their fault, that they didn't do this, or these gunshot victims that I treat, the jokes that are made about their station in life.
Right.
These have impact on those of us who are providing care for these folks, and you know, calling that out when it happens can lead to some tension. But you mentioned I'm a law enforcement officer, but I'm feeling some of the similar universal issues that I think a lot of Black professionals can relate to. I think it's a good discussion for the majority to hear and know about. You mentioned the Black Police Association, so tell us about that and how that relates to what goes on within the Dallas Police Department.
So the Black Police Association was formed in 1974, and of course, because of a lot of the injustices, you know, first of all, Black people couldn't even hire on, and then when we start trickling on, they realized there were animosities and oppositions, and they weren't being treated fairly, and opportunities were closed. So they formed an association to help to have a voice for certain things. And that association was also charged with not only dealing with a lot of the administrative duties on the police department, that association was also formed to always include community and bridge the gap with community. So that's another big thing that we're charged with. So internally, basically, a lot of the outsiders or civilians think that we're only there to get officers off of when they have an incident in the field to get them out of trouble. That's actually a very small component of my association. Now, there are three associations here in Dallas, and that's the Black Police Association, Latino Police Association, which again, predominantly Hispanic, ours predominantly Black, and then there's the Dallas Police Association, which is predominantly white, and of course, the one that was around before any of us were part of the department. So there you have it. So now they may be charged differently. A lot of their things are to get officers out of trouble when they do those wrongs. Again, that's part of what mine is, but the majority of it is administrative internal stuff. Like, you know, I was treated this way, or when I did this, my discipline was harsher than my white counterpart's discipline. So a lot of those injustices internally are what we work on. And then the opportunities. Hey, this unit here has been all white since the department's been in existence, and there's no Black people there, so there's no opportunity for Blacks. So we're still fighting those battles today, Dr. Williams. And then there's the community part of it, where we're pretty much the only police association that actually goes out in the community. I hold regular town halls at the Black Police Association where our doors are open for anybody in the community, predominantly Blacks, Hispanics, minorities, to come in, voice their concerns. I give them access to commanders, chiefs, judges, attorneys, social services people, things like that. Give them access to people they don't normally have access to. So we really are charged with doing a lot in the community.
Yeah, I attended one of your community events, and I was, you know, I was surprised. I didn't know what to expect, and I was like, oh, this is quite a service that they are providing for the communities that they serve. I learned something during that day. So,
You bet. And there's a lot of information out there. I mean, the only thing I wish is that people would take more of advantage of it, because again, I mean, you saw, I'm not sure what panel you went, but I mean, telling you, people on those panels are, I mean, they are stakeholders, they're influential people. They're people that can determine the outcome of your case. You can get good information. Like I say, they're judges that deal with a lot of cases that are happening in Dallas. And business owner, I've had millionaires in there, billionaires in there. I had the late, great T. Boone Pickens' wife there, Tony Pickens, who
I was there that day. That was the day I was there.
Okay, good. Right. So it's just not minorities. It's also that business component that's very crucial. So when you wonder why, you know, certain businesses aren't in the southern sector or the more minority sectors, you know, I brought them in to talk about some of those issues. And Tony Brinker said, you know, Tony Brinker Pickens at the time said that, hey, you know, one of the things that business owners take into account is, are my employees going to be safe? So, you know, it's not wise for them to move a business in a crime-ridden place that, you know, they know that, hey, their store may be robbed, their employees potentially murdered. So it's not a wise business decision to them. So to me, when minorities hear that of those communities, you might want to start now thinking, we got to take care of our community. We've got to start bringing this up if we expect businesses to invest in this area back here.
All right, T-Hop, you're about to get me on another subject. That's about structural violence, but that's covered for another show. So that's going to take a lot of work.
I told you, we can go ahead and
uplift those, uplift those communities. But we'll have you back to get into that right there, because you just touched one of my hot-button topics that gets me going. But the show's about you today. And I have two more things I want to talk to you about. And, you know, we're going on a record now. I revamped my show format this year, keep it down about 20 minutes, and we've come up on twice that much because you've been that good of a guest.
Has it been 40 minutes already, man?
Yeah, it's getting close to that right now.
Wow. Well, like I say, you can chop it up however you want to, but, man, this is stuff I enjoy talking about.
I don't chop anything. What we get is what we get.
And me and you, we bring perspectives to it that are other than the normal narrative that's out there. So that's why I really love engaging in someone like yourself with these conversations.
Right. Now, when you talk about your community outreach, you have your own radio show, Police Talk 101. Tell us a little bit about that.
So Police Talk 101 was started 3 years ago, and before that, there was when some of these shootings were happening, a radio host wanted to talk to some black officers to get their perspective. So went and did the interview, had a great turnout, people loved it, and the radio producer said, hey, you ought to do a show. You ever thought about doing a show? I'm like, nope, that's not me. I'm not that type of guy. Man, it's amazing how God orders your steps, ain't it? I'm sitting up saying no, and the following year, I'm end up doing a show. So she called me, hey, you really ought to do this. Have you thought about it, Officer Hopkins? I'm like, nope. And so she kept on me. And again, man, I don't know if she saw something, but whatever. So I finally agreed, okay, let me try it. And so I did it, man, and it just took off like wildfire. People were interested in the topics, the information, the education, the delivery, the platform.
It's not just for police officers.
No, so it's not for police officers. This is for everyone. This is for, man, if you're breathing, it's for you, because the information you get, you know, a lot of people don't know. I'll just give you something very, very basic. People, white officers always, you know, say, show me your hands. Well, we're trained that if we're going to get killed, it's going to come from what's in your hands, right? A knife, a gun. So if your hands are in your pocket, possibly concealing one of these things, we want to see them, because my life is at stake now. So, or a third party. So that's why we're always adamant about show us your hands. Another thing, a lot of the officers, when they pull up to you at night, you know, they shine all those bright lights on you, spotlight, overhead lights. Well, that's a defense for us, because we're walking up to something we don't know. People always think we know who we're pulling over. You know, when we talk to you, man, I'm a good guy. We don't know that. We have absolutely no idea that you are Dr. Brian Williams of the trauma center. We're stopping a car. The car could have anybody from somebody that just robbed a bank, just murdered his family, just raped, just whatever. We just do not know. So we're always cautious. It is one of the most dangerous things an officer will do is walk up to a car. Now, on the odd chance, which the numbers have gone up, that we're stopping that car and it is somebody that may potentially want to harm us or murder us, that number has gone up tremendously. So you're extremely cautious about the unknown, which you're walking up to. Now, we shouldn't walk up to you guns ablaze and get out of the car, but we're cautious about it. So we put those spotlights on so you can barely see us. It is hard for you to acquire our position if you're that bad guy that wants to kill me when I walk up to the car, because all you see is that bright light. So that is a defense for us, because we're almost defenseless as we approach your car.
Right.
So a lot of information like that. Yes.
Go ahead.
So a lot of the information like that we're putting out. But again, you know, there's much. We have, again, besides law enforcement officers, judges, we've had people on there that are doing good things in the community, taking kids, taking them to places, getting them in colleges. All sorts of things. Last week I did a show, black men who have had very negative upbringings. I mean, jail, drugs, and stuff like that, who have turned it around, who are now gainfully employed, who now are in business for themselves. So I take a bite out of a little bit of everything that people can learn from.
And if again, check out your show. Where can we find you?
Yeah, so the show is taped every day live, every Tuesday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. On Facebook, you can go to Police Talk 101, all right? So Facebook, Police Talk 101, every Tuesday from 7 p.m. to 9. Also, you can go to Fishbowl Radio Network, that's FBRN.us, Frank Boy, Robert Nancy .us at 7 p.m. and just pull up the show Police Talk 101 there, and you can get it there on the internet also.
And you take call-ins and Facebook questions live
Correct.
On the show?
You better believe it. We take live questions, so there's no filtering, brother. Let me tell you, we get them live. There's no filtering, and thank God we haven't had anything so egregious that we needed to hang up on people or anything like that. So we take phone calls live. We constantly give out the number during the show. And then again, if people comment on Facebook, a lot of times I'll read those questions and we'll just knock it around. Hey, what do you think about this? This person says this officer did this or they did whatever it is. We will talk about it and address it. We won't hide from it or sugarcoat it.
All right. So before we get to our last question, there, T. Hobb, that's Police Talk 101, Tuesday night, 7 to 9 Central, Fishbowl Radio Network, or on Facebook.
Yeah.
All right. T. Hobb, the Super Cop, we know where to find your radio show. If someone wants to contact you, how will they contact you?
Well, they can contact me at the Black Police Association. And the thing about that, with that being said, the Black Police Association here, there's a lot of things that people want to get off their chest or they want to bring to the attention of, let's just say, a police chief or whatever. We're a good conduit for doing that as well. So when people want to be heard some type of way or feel something so important but they don't have the horsepower, right, to talk to a chief of police or a city manager, we also do that for them. So you can contact me at 214-421-7644. That's 214-421-7644. Or you can email me at bpadallaspresident@gmail. Again, that's BPA for Black Police Association, Boy Paul Apple, dallaspresident@gmail.com.
Do you have any Instagram or Facebook or Twitter tags, or you prefer the phone number and the email?
Yeah, that's good. So on Twitter, Twitter is under Police Talk 101, and Twitter and what's the other one? Instagram is also Police Talk 101. So that's what you can get me at. That's where you can get me at.
If y'all couldn't catch all that, I'll put that in the show notes, which you can go to BrianWilliamsMD.com after the show, and it will be there. That's Brian with an I, and just click on the podcast page, and all the information will be there for you. And while you're there, also sign up for the newsletter and let your family and friends know to check out Race, Violence, and Medicine. But let's get back to T-Hop, the Super Cop. All right, I'm looking at your website for Police Talk 101, and I see you got these big tree trunk arms.
Man, no, I'm a small guy, brother.
So I'm going on a limb and assume that you get to the gym on a regular basis, because that's because of what the job demands. when you're working out and you got the headphones in, what are you pumping to get you all hyped up?
Man, you're going to be surprised, Brian. A lot of times it's Christian music. It's
all right.
Up gospel, man. So I'm very versatile, you know. I try to stay centered, you know, with my faith. You know, we start getting too far out of that. We start doing stuff we don't need to be doing. So
right.
A lot of times it's gospel music, but I listen to a little bit of everything. I mean, I listen to some hip-hop every once in a while. I'll listen to some rock and roll. I'm a big avid fan of blues and jazz. So man, I hit the gamut, man. I can go around all those different forms of music.
I say I grew up on Saturday mornings with the gospel blaring in the house while mom had my sister and I doing chores.
Yeah. So I have that upbringing too, man. So again, I try to stay centered as a Christian man. You know, knowing I'm not perfect, but I try to live that life as best I possibly can. And I, you know, as you grow older, you get a little stronger in whatever that belief system is or faith or whatever. So I try to just include it because again, if I'm directed that way and I fall short, at least I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm trying to do good.
All right. There you have it. Senior Corporal Terrence Hopkins, Dallas Police Department, President of the Black Police Association of Dallas, and host of Police Talk 101. He's been our first guest in this series, and I'm sure we're going to have him back because there's a lot more I want to ask, but hey, clock is running, time is out. T. Hopkins, Super Cop,
yeah.
Thank you for joining us on Race, Violence, and Medicine.
Well, hey, it's my pleasure, Doctor, and anytime you need me, I'm here.
All right, y'all, this is Dr. Brian Williams. As always, I appreciate you for sticking with the show. I see my subscriber count is continuing to creep up slowly, so I guess we're doing okay with our guest. The show is available at racebondsandmedicine.com, brianwilliamsnd.com, and also anywhere you get your podcast, and I do mean anywhere. Spotify, Apple, Anchor, they're all out there. Tell your friends and family to check out the show. We'll be back again in 1 week on Race, Violence, and Medicine.